The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
And good morning, everyone. Thank God it's Friday. Welcome to a Friday edition of Analyze This here on your NPR station in the U.S. Virgin Islands, WTJX FM 93.1. My name is Neville James, and we got a great show to wrap up the week. You know, we've been talking with the National Weather Service virtually every day because this week has been somewhat unique. It's been a good week, by the way. So you know what? We're going to go straight to it. We got Professor Gabriel Lojero joining us this morning. Good morning, Gabriel. How are you?
Good morning.
Good. How's the weather in San Juan?
Oh, right now it's beautiful. It's sunny, calm winds, so everything tranquil. In fact, last night we had some pretty strong thunderstorms along the northern areas of San Juan that was pretty prolonged for like 2 to 3 hours. So we had a nice lightning show.
Interesting.
Yes.
Any Sahara dust in the region?
No. Pretty tranquil. In fact, we usually, in order to see Saharan dust, here we tend to look at El Yunque as the, you know, area to see if there's some dust. And El Yunque, in the rainforest, it's, you know, you can see very well. So very little to no dust concentrations at this time.
Okay.
And it's expected to remain that way for the next several days.
Okay, good. So what we'll do is we'll get a boat advisory.
Very tranquil seas expected for the next several days as well because we have very light winds. In fact, seas are going to be less than 3 feet. And the rip current risk is actually going to be low, basically, through the next several days as well.
Okay.
So marine and beach weather looks pretty good at this time.
And any precipitation anticipated over the weekend?
At this time, it looks very limited. We cannot rule out a shower. But given the light winds that we were expecting this weekend, that's not going to favor like any like trade wind showers or any of that sort of nature. So it looks like it's going to be pretty much activity very limited. So cannot rule out a shower here or there, but mostly tranquil conditions, mostly dry and sunny conditions for the most part.
It looks like we got a very brief weather preview for the weekend, so everything's gonna be okay.
At this time, that's what it looks like. So,
okay, appreciate that. Thank you, Gabriel Lojero.
Have a good day and a good weekend.
You too. Same to you. Thanks for everything. Right. Thanks for everything you provided throughout the weekend, educating us on why we had that heavy shower in such a short period of time on Wednesday night.
No problem. That's what we're here for.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Everything.
Thank you, Gabriel.
Alert, everybody.
Okay. Good. Bye bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, that's Gabriel Lojero. Talking to them throughout the week pretty much made today's weekend preview, you know, as smooth as ever. Looks like we're going to have a good weekend, okay? So, and you said our boaters and beachgoers, the shores are yours. Of course, you know, we're in a pandemic, so we got to always exercise some caution, social distancing and all that, particularly on St. Croix side. We're really struggling over here from time to time. St. Thomas and St. John, you're gone clear based on the numbers. So that's what we're dealing with. Let's go straight to Mr. Raymond Williams. Of course, you know, he's a man of many hats. Lottery director, member of the Public Services Commission, chairman of the Board of Elections.
Yes, sir.
Chairman of the Board of Elections. But today, neither of those three roles are in play. You are giving us a preview of what to expect. I believe it's 2 weeks from Monday, right?
That's correct.
From Monday, November the 1st, Bull and Bread Day, Liberty Day, Dung in the Mecca, Grove Place. You know what? I'm going to yield to you. Good morning, sir. The floor is yours. Talk to the public.
Hey, Neville, good morning, and thanks for the opportunity. I just, you know, we, thanks to COVID last year, we, for the first time in my lifetime anyway, we held the Liberty Day celebration virtually. It was a very, not even a sombering feeling. I felt like I was naked speaking to myself in a mirror, you know, and there's no audience, there's no camaraderie. We didn't have the normal political activities that you have out there. You couldn't see Janet in the distance, you know, and all the other little vendors and stuff like that. And, you know, we made sure that we commemorated the life and time and the history of David Hamilton Jackson virtually. But, you know, in conversation with the governor about a month ago, I said, hey, you know, I know COVID is still out there. I know we can't have a mass gathering activity like we'd want to do. And, you know, he was like, man, it's my third year and I'm missing out yet again. I said, hey, the life. So what we agreed to do this year is do it an in-person activity, but we're going to do it at Government House. And, of course, because of the Health Department and CDC requirements for social distancing and numbers gathering, we're going to host a vaccinated event celebration at Government House on November 1st. So what I need people to do is if they are interested in coming, we need to file their names on a guest list. We can only allow up to 150 people, unfortunately. But people can call me or call my office in Sunny Hills, the lottery office in Sunny Hills, and leave their names with my secretary, and I will try to get them in a guest list. I'm not committing to anyone or is the first 150 names that are on that list. We've compiled somewhat of a guest list already, you know, with Grovians, of course, and some other people. And, of course, naturally, we've invited the politicians. But the objective is to give other people in the community, people who I know for sure that come out to the activity for the activity every year and not just to for a line, come to hear the message. I want them to call and so I can get them on a list to get into Government House. But you have to bring your vaccination card as proof of your vaccination. This year, we're going to start the activity at about 2:00 in the afternoon. I'm still trying to secure some entertainment, which I think that people would like, so we can start out the day with some live entertainment, and not music per se, but dance and art and stuff like that. We'll probably begin the program around 2:30-ish or so. Our keynote speaker this year, interesting enough, is Mr. the one and only former Senator Usi Richards. You know, I dig deep, I dig far. I try to find people that can speak on the subject matter with some kind of eloquence, with some kind of grace, with a whole lot of knowledge of the history. And, you know, people can deliver a message to the people listening. So, you know, I asked Usi. He graciously accepted. So he's going to be our keynote speaker this year. We'll have the regular activities like the delegates of Congress, our Senate President, our Lieutenant Governor, and our Governor speaking as well. You know, and hopefully we'll have some other entertainment in between there. We're also going to be preparing the traditional bull and bread meal, which will be served in the courtyard at Government House after the program is completed. So I figure, you know, it's not exactly what we want, but it's better than nothing at all. We're going to stream it live, hopefully, on the Government Access Channel. I'm going to have to talk to Tanya to see if we can do it through her stream as well. Because for the people who can't be there in person, at least they have the opportunity to celebrate with us virtually. So that's what we're looking at this year, starting around 2:00, you know, to make sure that we celebrate the life and time of David Hamilton Jackson. So that's it on a nutshell.
Streaming?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm trying to think. It's going to be a courtyard thing or a second floor?
It's going to be in a ballroom. The program will be in a ballroom, but the serving of the meal will be in the courtyard. So, you know, we'll hopefully have some music out there as well. Just so people to socialize, but safely, you know, enjoy the meal. We're going to probably, because of the restrictions, we'll probably be packaging the meals prior to serving them out so that, you know, people don't have to have their hands all over stuff, you know. So it's a unique way of doing it. I don't know, like I said, in my lifetime, I've celebrating this historic event more than 50 years. I've never known it happen outside of Grove. One year, we had, I think it was Hurricane Hugo, had come through, and we weren't able to do a full-blown activity, but we still hosted Liberty Day on Liberty Day in Grove Place without power.
Mm-hmm. You know?
But other than that, we have always, through rain, through sleet, through snow, through hail, we've always had that activity. And, you know, it is the objective and goal to continue to host that activity, you know, in whatever form or fashion we have to, with the changes that we face today in life, you know. So that's what we're going to do.
Now, with it being an outdoor event, typically, why bring it indoors and not keep it outdoors, given we're dealing with a pandemic?
Well, multiple reasons, you know. The plan, like I said, is to do the program in the ballroom. You don't want to, you can't have more than 150 people anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're separating the activity, because one thing you don't want to.
Oh, if you do it outdoors, you can't really limit the amount of people that show up.
Well, you can, because you only allow 150 in the door.
No. I said if you were to do it outdoors at the normal location.
Oh yeah.
Then it would be hard to contain it to 150. Yeah.
Yeah. If we were to host the activity in Grove like we normally do, you can't tell people, you can't put up a gate around.
Yeah.
The
community. Yeah.
So people can't come in, and you know, I'm definitely not gonna engage in any arguments or disturbances with anyone trying to prevent them from participating, because that's what I would want to be the case, for people to have been able to come out and celebrate with us. But COVID is the boss these days.
Mm-hmm.
We have no choice but to follow the rules and the guidelines set forward so that we can keep the community safe, you know?
Well, you know something, I think people will understand what you're trying to accomplish and what you don't want to happen. You know what I'm saying? That's the most important thing. So, So I think that's a compromise. I it's gonna be weird though, you know what I'm saying? Because this is a Grove Place event. The location of the event is actually as important, if not more important, than the event itself.
It is even more important.
It is more important
because, you know, you're celebrating that history in a historic place, you know, but this is a compromise that we have to live with, unfortunately, but we're going to do it. The bottom line is that we're going to celebrate it. We're going to be able to do it in person, and people can get the opportunity to celebrate it with us, you know, whether at the ballroom or virtually. At least we will have and host the activity, you know?
Yeah, man. Well, that's a good start. Now we could just work on perfecting how to make the activity as safe as possible, and all that logistical stuff that we deal with. And hopefully by then, our numbers on the St. Croix side will be receding like they have on St. Thomas.
Yeah, I pray for that, man. I pray. It's amazing how the tables have turned, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
St. Thomas was way out the front.
Yeah. I just did the our daily numbers here. We're at 124 actives, and St. Thomas is at 14. We are most,
wow.
You know, we're over eight times the amount of St. Thomas, and St. John is one. You know what I'm saying? Wow. So yeah. So we there's something going on over here. Where our most recent data drop, we're at like 8-9% positivity rate. Normally we're not that high. You know, we had.
Right.
Yeah. Let me look it over here.
You had quite a few deaths yesterday. That was alarming.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we had 476 positives This is the Wednesday data that they made available yesterday. We had 476 negatives and 40 positives. Normally, I mean, that's manageable, right? Because that's 11 to 1, almost 12 to 1, right under 12 to 1. But normally we're 19 to 1 and above. But St. Thomas, 197 negatives, 1 positive. St. John, 66 negatives, 1 positive. So of the 42 positives, 40. The new positives, 40 were on St. Croix. That's an overwhelming percentage.
Overwhelming.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So we need to get that to recede over the next, week and a half, 2 weeks. And then leading into to your event, which is, like I said, 18 days from today, right? Today's the 15th.
Yes,
16.
November
17 days from today. 17 days from today. Yeah, November the 1st, 2020. So details again, sir, with respect to the event. Give me the details. With respect.
Like I said, it's going to start at 2 o'clock at Government House in the ballroom.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have some live activity. Hopefully, if the groups have asked to entertain us, if they have their vaccines and stuff like that. Then we have Uzi Richards as our keynote speaker this year. We'll, after the program is over, we'll go down to the courtyard and serve the traditional blue and red meal. So, you know, with a little bit of entertainment there as well.
Okay.
So, you know, hopefully to wrap it up.
Okay.
I'll be there after.
Well, we get back to you between now and then, for sure.
Good thing.
Okay.
Good thing.
And thanks for going out of your way to make the event happen again, even though it's gonna be absolutely unique, not being done in the heartland. But I'm sure it's gonna be a success without a doubt.
Well, we're gonna give it our best shot, you know, because
it got to happen, man.
Yeah.
Last year didn't happen, and it got to happen. Can't hold it out for 2 years.
There's no excuse for not being able to host the activity, and that's our goal every year, to try and make it happen. You know?
Awesome. Thank you very much, Raymond Williams. Bull and Bread Committee. What do you call it?
Hey, man, we don't have a name like that anymore.
Liberty Day festivities event taking place this year. Modified, but it's going to happen nonetheless.
That's right.
You got it. Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate it.
Okay, brother. You take care.
Okay, good. That's Rima Williams. Of course, like I said, he is the lottery director, a public service commission member, and Virgin Islands Board of Elections chairman. He also serves as one of the leaders for the Liberty Day festivities down there in Grove Place this year. It's going to be held at Government House in Christiansted, indoors and outdoors. We'll take a break and we'll come back and we'll talk with a representative from University of Virgin Islands. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome to Banking for Your Business. At Bank of St. Croix, we make it easy to mind your business. We offer checking and savings accounts with no hoops or hassles. Our mobile apps provide you access to your business accounts on the go, and our merchant card services allow you to accept credit and debit payments anywhere, anytime. Plus, with our easy-to-use online banking platform, our bank is always open. We invite you to come see the difference at Bank of St. Croix.
I'm Jen White, the new host of NPR's 1A, a daily show that asks America what it wants to be. Hear from people across the country, listeners like you, with conversations for the relentlessly curious on the issues that matter most. Join me next time on 1A from NPR.
1A, weekdays at 3 p.m.
Tom has been a teacher for over 40 years. One day, I think one of the students had asked the question and he didn't remember the answer. And I also noticed that he was letting his class out earlier than they were supposed to let out. I was really starting to worry.
Levi and I talked about how it would change our lives, but he was there beside me.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Time to get your groove on. I'm Felix Contreras. Here on Alt Latino, we are all about cumbia in all of its forms. The humble Afro-Colombian rhythm has spread throughout the Americas, and you wouldn't know it if you listened to regular radio. Our show is where you can get a bit of history, some lessons in culture, all while dancing to the beat. NPR Music's Alt Latino, right here on this radio station.
Saturdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
And we are back here on Analyze This. Weather Service gave us an awesome preview for the weekend, so we're glad for that. Good news with respect to bull and bred activities for 2021. Of course, it was not did not happen in 2020 because of the pandemic. This year, they're doing a modified event in Christiansted, indoors and outdoors, limited to X amount of people. So hopefully that works out as well. Now we got Miss Trudy Golfing. Okay, now good to see you.
Man, it's all good. So blessed. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, man, bring the microphone a little closer so you could. Yeah, so the people
close
can
enough,
hear you.
Up close and personal.
No, you're good. Yeah, man. I hear, first of all, like I said, good to see you. But when I hear your voice, you sound like Elaine Thompson, or no? When I
Same family, Jamaica
100%. Yeah, I saw, you know, because we were watching Olympics a lot, and when she was interviewed, you got the same kind of voice like Elaine Thompson, man. Yeah. Are you entire beat up on people like, oh, that's a runner off shot over the all the woman them.
That's how we do. A woman power.
Yes, yeah, man. Lady power, girl power. It was nice, and there was a clip with her grandmother, and that was a nice clip with her grandmother. I said, yes.
That means I go a Tokyo to do, right?
Yes. And then that was after she won the 100.
Yes.
So when the girl asks her, you think she going to win the 200? How you mean?
That's how the Jamaican parents and grandparents behave,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I know. I raised up in a house, one of my best friends from Jamaica, so I know about this. She said, how you mean? She said, and when they asked her, she said, well, when Daniel went in the lion's den.
That's the next thing. Always a scripture verse. Yeah. Always
well,
from the Bible.
That's how we are. But you know, that's all we had. You know, that's our forefathers. That's all they had. All they had was the faith.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So it's easy. Not easy. It's natural for them to go back to scripture as a foundation to get us to the next step. You know what I'm saying? And that was nice to see. Gwen, yes. So that's good.
And it normally is a big celebration in Jamaica. Because of the pandemic, it's, you know, but before the pandemic, it was streets are blocked and people are just amazed. And the amazing thing is that Jamaica really is home to not only the fastest woman, but also the fastest man. And, you know, so we have Elaine, and then we also have Usain Bolt. So
yes.
Jamaica owns
yes,
both,
sir.
Right?
Yes, sir. Yes,
but
sir.
But the beautiful thing is we represent the Caribbean. So it's a family affair.
Yeah. Our Olympic Committee president was talking about that. He said, you know, even though we're competing against each other, there's a regional connection.
Yeah.
And they always come together out of the Caribbean delegations.
Yeah.
They come together, and you know, we had the 400 with Kirani. Kirani J from either Grenada or St. Vincent, I think it was
Grenada.
Yeah. So, and you know, historically we've been dominant. Haisley Crawford, he was the 100 meter champion in 1976. Dan Quarry from Jamaica.
Again,
yeah, man.
Yes.
So you know, it goes on and on. If I can't win it, then one of ours could win it in
got
the region.
Win.
You check what I'm saying? So we good. We good for that. But you're here today representing UVI because you are with UVI. So full introduction to the audience and then speak to why you're here.
Okay, great. Yeah. Thank you. So my name is Trudy Golofin. I am the Director for Residence Life and Student Housing and at UVI on the Albert Ashin campus on St. Croix.
Mm-hmm.
We also have housing. Some persons call it dorms, dormitories, residence halls. We have it on both campuses, St. Croix and St. Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
And so for today, and I'm so grateful to be here because Dr. David Hall, our president, pretty much has announced for this semester and for spring 2022 that all students who live in the residence halls, the university will pay for their room.
Wow.
Amazing.
Yes.
And so for a student who lives in the residence halls, they normally pay for their meals and they normally pay for their rooms. And so students are given the chance to come and live in the residence halls for these two semesters. And the room portion of your bill is taken care of. You cover your meals. You can do a two-meal plan. You can do a three-meal plan. But meal is on you. Room is on us. And one of the main reasons for doing that is we're all going through such hardship with the COVID-19 pandemic. I mean, it's affecting everybody from different areas. And so the university has access to the CARES Grant Fund, CARES Act Fund. And through that, a few proposals were shared. And we were so happy that Dr. Hall has, he goes the extra mile to ensure that students are covered from all areas. He has what is called a five pillars document that he speaks about different aspects of financial support for the student. But for residential living, students can get the chance to come, live in the residence halls, have an environment that is conducive to them studying to be successful academically. So that's the main thing for us.
Yeah, man.
And so I want the chance to let the students who are not aware of it, to for them to be as informed, students and their families, to grab this opportunity. I mean, what more can you ask for? You're getting free tuition, you're getting free room. At least 75% of your college expenses are already paid for this semester, plus mm-hmm. among other financial assistance that they're getting on campus.
No, man, that's great news. And what's the capacity down there at the Albertine?
Wonderful question. So we have 90 bed capacity on St. Croix, Albert Ashin campus.
Mm-hmm.
St. Thomas has almost 400.
Okay.
Yep. And so for St. Croix, and we house both male and females. They live separately in separate units or separate blocks,
mm-hmm.
but we do have males and females on campus. And we have students from St. Croix, well, the Virgin Islands, the Caribbean, many parts of the states, and pretty much worldwide. We have what is called the National Student Exchange Program. So we have students coming here from as far as Alaska.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
That's nice. Yep, that's yep. nice.
Yeah. Students from Canada. We have a student who is from Ghana, but she resides in the States now. She goes to college in the States, but she came here for her exchange. So we have a mix of students.
Okay, that's good. So 500 territory-wide?
Yeah.
Thereabouts?
Yes, thereabouts.
Yeah. And about 90 to 100 on St. Croix and 400 on St. Thomas.
Yeah.
What is different with COVID, in effect, with the pandemic?
One of the biggest differences that we have had is students who were in pretty much, you call it isolation at home.
Mm-hmm.
They miss a sense of interaction because when you live in the residence hall, it's a sense of community. And for us, even St. Croix, well, it's family. It's like, well, on both campuses. So one of the biggest impacts is just that them being able to, you know, relate to each other. And for those students who are academically challenged, have potential to succeed, but they need that extra push. They don't have that support at home as they would have in the residence halls.
Mm-hmm.
So coming back to campus is a big plus for them. But one of the biggest changes for us this semester is the fact that only vaccinated students can live on campus.
Okay.
And so over the years, before COVID, you have had to be vaccinated. But since COVID, it's even more of a requirement. And so that's one of the biggest moves that we have. One of the biggest, I would probably say, challenges too, because there are some persons who are not for vaccination and probably could have got an exemption in the past for religious reasons. But to live in the residence halls now, exemptions are almost pretty much like a no-no because it is just so much of a challenge. So that's one of the biggest other change I would have had with that. So the numbers look encouraging. And so students who are interested are trying to get adjusted to that requirement. So those students who are a little bit hesitant to be vaccinated,
mm-hmm.
some of them have actually made the move to get vaccinated to come and live on campus because it's a plus for them to be there. And
unfortunately, a mandate to actually serve as an impetus for them because, you know, I'm pro-vaccination. I do every day on my show. You know, I can't tell people what to do.
Yes.
But I'm telling them, you know, the name of the show is Analyze This. We analyze the numbers. You know, the percentages are not 70% versus 30%. The percentages are 97% to 3%. When you look at those who are infected and impacted and worst case scenarios happening. So when it's lopsided like that, I think it's easier to process what we're dealing with. And, you know, yesterday on this show, I announced our 76th COVID-19 related death here in the territory. Within three more hours, I had gotten word that they gone up to 78.
Yes.
We got into two more, and a 39-year-old and a 59-year-old.
Yep.
And the one that I announced was a 78-year-old that I know personally. So that one hit home for me.
Wow.
So, yeah, and I didn't even know that they were, you know, in the hospital. The university is merely doing what it has to do to keep everybody safe, right? That's what this is about, right?
And let me tell you, it's such a big difference, especially mm-hmm. for us this semester, for this, because last semester we had students on campus. They were all in single rooms, but we were not vaccinated. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a requirement. This semester, there's just so much sense of, you feel a little bit safer.
Mm-hmm.
And we do still, you know, live with the other protocols, wearing the masks and, you know, you're sanitizing and stuff. We also, in addition to being vaccinated, we actually have COVID testing every week, other week.
Okay, yeah.
So
yeah.
What it does, because we understand that being vaccinated doesn't mean that you won't get the COVID virus.
It's like the flu shot. Just because you get the flu shot don't mean you can't catch the flu.
Yeah.
What it does is it puts your body in a better position to deal with it in the event that you get it.
Yes.
There's no guarantee.
There's no guarantee. So us doing these regular testing, and it has really reached up on race pretty much every week now, because if you did it last week, you skip 1 week, you go to the other week, but somebody who did it a week after you. So every week, it gives us a control, a sense of lid, as to the environment, mm-hmm. so that we can feel, you know, a little bit freer around each other amidst all the other protocols. And because even campus, for both campuses, we actually have we have taken off some of our rooms offline, so that if anybody was to take sick, they could have that space to, you know, get over it, or until Department of Health comes in, if that were to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but just being vaccinated, it gives us so much more of a better peace of mind, I would say,
mm-hmm.
for our students to interact and appreciate the experience.
No, that's a good move there. That's a good move there. What about, you said rooms are free. You pay a board in terms of for meals and all that stuff, right?
Yes.
And that is going well. That's going smooth. You have the protocols in place and all that stuff.
Yes.
So when it's feeding time. That's what we used to call it in college, feeding time at the zoo. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's proper spacing and all that stuff. All those protocols in place.
All of that is in place. And even our students who come here from the States, and they always comment about how much bigger our rooms are.
Mm-hmm.
So the rooms are nicely spaced.
Well, this is paradise.
Pardon?
This is paradise.
This is
paradise.
That's it, you know? Right?
I mean, they're right, because, you know, I've seen rooms here, and I've seen rooms when I was in college. You know, I was lucky, though. But it really depends on the school you're at. And, you know, it's one of the things where, even though it sounds wrong, it's a reality. You know, you get what you pay for. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes.
On the mainland, I'm talking about. You know, but here, you know, we just have a natural hospitality thing. And so I ain't shocked to hear that I know that our rooms are bigger than on the mainland.
Yes, yes. And I really have to give shout outs and say thank you so much to the resident students who live on campus, because we could have asked for a better set of students in terms of support and cooperation. I mean, Mr. GM, sometimes I have to have my two masks in my pockets just in case I forget to wear a mask, because they're the ones coming all masked up or reminding you remember to wear your mask. And even with everything else that we have in place to try to keep the environment as safe as possible, they themselves are just constantly mindful of the part and the role that they play in keeping others safe and themselves safe.
Yeah, but we're in survival mode now, you know. You know what I'm saying? So that's a good move. I see a lot of development taking place. The simulation center,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And of course, I do some work with the RT Park 64 West. So UVI development might look nice down there, man.
Yeah, and we're hoping to look nicer coming on, even for the residence halls over the next few semesters, probably the next year or so.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking to actually AC all the rooms.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, man.
And for spring, we're actually having a new lock-in system where students will be using swipe cards to access their rooms now.
Mm-hmm.
So, and our internet services are improving. So we are looking at some of the different ways. Dr. Hall has a monthly touch connection with resident students. and that give, not well, all students, I should say, and students will highlight whatever they that's a chance for them to highlight what improvements they want to see. Okay. And it takes those things seriously. So there may be some things that we may not have seen or have on the books that they suggest, and we try to accommodate our students with that. But it's UVI. We're the gem of the Caribbean on this side. So we have to do the best to make sure that we represent ourselves proudly and the islands.
Without a doubt. And like I said, I do some work with the RT Park and the Tech Village project. Teachers Hotel included as part of that. So
yes.
That's one of the dynamics there as well. So hopefully that comes to fruition. There's some opposition because the parking lot adjacent or across from to the east of the fairgrounds, that's one of the areas that they're looking to develop. And of course, you know, there's going to be some opposition, but we'll deal with that. UVI is a land grant institute, so it's important that the extension service and the other areas are respected as well, right? What's that like? Isn't there a sense of being proud knowing that our university here in the Virgin Islands is land grant and all that stuff? We're not concrete, not all concrete like the mainland universities everybody know about.
And that's amazing for our environment. And if you realize, as a matter of fact, for resident students, we have a number of programs including gardening. We're trying to create what we call UVI Gardens in support of the land grant institution aspect of it, and the fact that we're the only HBCU outside of the United States that is in the islands. So these are things that we're extremely proud of. And it's realized the School of Agriculture has a program on now for students who want to study agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
So we have taken the land grant seriously, and you know, we have the CES, the Carpet Extension Services. The
Extension AES, Service, correct, yeah.
And so forth. We're having World Food Day coming up this weekend.
Yeah, yeah, it's an October thing, right?
Yeah,
you're right. I forgot about that, yeah.
Yep. And yeah, it's key for us to bring, because look here, the reality is that we import over 90% of our food.
98.
Crazy.
Madness.
Crazy.
And our land fertile. You see this? You see the kind of rain, and we could get green like this. Yeah, man. Yeah.
So it's an university that we're higher learning. We're supposed to be that guiding light. So correct. our job, which we take seriously, is to make sure that we do the things that we can to ensure that we, and so we're hoping that as we grow, as we keep going, that we can be a part of correcting that 98%
of course
dependence and
yes, sir. Reducing it significantly. I mean,
definitely.
I mean, it's bad, you know, when you think about it. And we used to be we bragged about the St. Croix in particular and the Virgin Islands being the breadbasket of the Caribbean. And here we are now where everything is flipped and we're exporting so much, such a great percentage of what we consume. So we're going to work on that.
But look, I mean, and we have the ideal resources. We have the sun, we have the rain, we have the land.
Logic.
So we just do what we got to do. But
logic.
And so even with residential living, when students come to live in the residence halls, it's not a bed and breakfast atmosphere. When you come in, you have the chance to learn something, a new skill, be involved in something that can enhance your life after you leave. And so even with the land grant concept in the residence halls, as I said before, we're starting these UVI gardens
mm-hmm.
that we can teach students how to grow their own stuff, whether it be vegetables, whether it be, you know, we're planning to do sorrel, trying to do different things. So after you leave UVI and you go, you can help yourself,
yeah,
even to grow your own bush tea.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah, man. So, Dolphin, thank you very much. Glad to have you here.
Yep.
And keep in touch, okay? And
definitely.
Let me know what's going on.
Thanks
right?
for having me. Appreciate
of course.
It.
And of course, the slang for the day. How you mean?
How you mean?
That's Trudy Dolphin from UVA. We're talking about Elaine Thompson, grandmother. Awesome woman. Talking about her grandchild from Banana Grung.
From Banana Grung, yes.
Okay. Good thing. We'll be back right after this with Calvert White, Sports Park and Recreation Commissioner. He's going to be here for the rest of the show. We'll be right back.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Hi, this is Steve Inskeep with NPR's Morning Edition. Our goal is to bring you news that matters, to keep you in touch with information that you need to make sense of the world in what can seem like a senseless time. Over the course of a day, a week, a month, the news unfolds and we're there with you day by day. Listen to Morning Edition every day.
Morning Edition weekdays at 5 a.m.
To protect her home and family in a disaster, Karen was willing to wade through water, mud, and insurance paperwork.
Yeah, I can do this.
You go, Karen! By simply understanding and updating what her insurance covers and doesn't cover now, she'll be better prepared no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
I'm Michelle Martin. Here on All Things Considered, we keep you up to date on the news. But we're not here just to give you the sound bites. We're here to help you understand what's really going on, the stories behind the sound bites. In a time when misinformation and even disinformation is everywhere, why not take some time with us this weekend to get the facts? Join us on the next All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered, weekdays at 5 p.m.
And we are back in effect, and looking forward to the remainder of the mid-month edition of Analyze This. Today is October 15th. Time flying. It was October 1st 2 weeks ago when we had Kyle Fleming here with the Power Hour, and time just moving. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, time waits for no one, and we good. Let me read the state of the virus here on the New York Times. You know, we do a national coverage as well as a local coverage before I bring in six or one half, a dozen of the other. Junior joining us here, Calvert Dwight. You can get him to put on his headphones, and he's dealing with some stuff right now. Okay, you know, he's always busy. He got like a million projects at Sports Park and Recreation. Here we go, right? State of the virus. Reports of new cases continue to trend steadily downward. Around 89,000 cases are being identified each day, down from more than 160,000 daily at the beginning of September. About 720,000 deaths have been linked to the United States. The country has averaged around 1,800 newly reported deaths a day. That's a lot, man, over the last week. A figure that is somewhat inflated by the backlogged death reports in Arkansas. Okay, so it's really not as much in real time as it is because of the backlog. While most of the country is rebounding from the summer case surge, trouble spots remain. Colorado, Vermont, and Michigan are among a handful of states seeing sustained growth, case growth. Alaska continues to lead the country in recent cases per capita, though case levels have started to decline in recent days. Anchorage, the state's largest city, recently approved a mask mandate after heated debate. Situation continues to improve in the South, the region that suffered the worst this summer. Florida now has one of the lowest average daily case rates in the country. So that's where we at nationally. And you know, locally, like I said, struggling here on St. Croix. Positivity rate at 9%, or really 8% in the last data drop. St. Thomas, brilliant, 197, negative, 1 positive. St. John, leading as well, 66-1, negative to positive. And the mainland, big number. Hospitalizations are now down to 64,085. Commissioner White, put on some headphones there. They're right in front of you, on top of the microphone. And, you know, first of all, I want to say good morning to you, Commish. I know that, you know, I've reached out to you in the past, and you've always made yourself available. Great conversation in different capacities. But you in the studio today, man?
It only took you 2 years to get me in the studio.
technically, the 27th of October will make 1 year and 6 months. So not necessarily 2 years. You get away. You reached the year and a half threshold. But good to see you, man.
Always a pleasure, man. Appreciate it being here live in person.
You, like you see why it's easy to come to work for me in the morning,
yeah,
man?
Yeah, it's a beautiful view, man.
Yeah, man.
After coming here, I can't do no more phone interviews. I got to do it in person all the time.
That's what I'm saying. How's the department?
Everything is good, man. We had some big wins this week. Some good things going on.
Well, yeah, the floor is yours, man.
You know, I'm sure everybody saw in the newspaper today. We finally got the Kelowna permits From FEMA. So, you know, the Pauly Joseph Stadium is going to move forward. So that's great, great news.
And that's a near and dear thing to your dad in particular, right?
Yeah, well, I just think to the people of the Virgin Islands, man.
I agree. I know that part, but your dad in particular been championing that, you know, he's growing up Grove and West.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
Yeah, so speak about that.
Yeah, it's just great news that we finally get the permits now that we could move forward and you know, people are saying, probably going to say, well, okay, they got the permits now. What? Spoke to the company today, GEC, and we're planning to start pouring concrete Monday.
Wow.
Yeah. We're moving forward. We're moving forward.
That's nice, man.
So Monday we should be there pouring concrete. I'll try to get down there. I think the governor is going to try to get down there. But it's just great news to just see that the project is now heading in the right direction. I've made it a big, big challenge, and I'm hoping that I live up to that. But I said that I'm going to be the commissioner that is there to cut the ribbon once this park is finished and completed. But we got some other big wins. We presented a check to the Caribbean Drag Racing Association yesterday, Mr. Arthur Hector, to move that project forward. As you know, the governor approved appropriation for, I think it was like $675,000 for the completion of that track, the barriers on the side. So we issued them half of the 50% of that amount yesterday.
Yeah, something like $339,000.
Correct.
Yeah.
Once I didn't want to get them the whole check. I said, show me that you're doing some stuff and you're moving forward.
The remainder is there, but you're going to see some initiative. Correct.
But
like
you know, Arthur is really pushing forward with our project. So I have no doubt that we'll see the end of that project. Got the permits from DPNR to start the project down at the Vince and Mason Pool. So that project is going to be starting within the next week or two. Notice to proceed was already given to the contractor. So that's a big project again down in the town of Frederickstead. Some other projects was given notice to proceed yesterday, the Fort Frederick Beach. So I got some big wins this week, man.
Well, you know, we could use some wins, man. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
It's been the pandemic really set things back because territory wide on every level. We were really looking to hit full stride around the time the pandemic rolled in here in March of 2020. I had met with the governor in October of 2019. And he told me, you had 100 of something projects territory-wide.
If you look at them, if you separate them, a lot of my projects was combined. So a lot of the smaller projects we did was combine them to make bigger projects.
Okay, folded it. But if you were to isolate the actual projects, you were like, you said like 160 when you look at it.
That might be a little stretching. That might be a little bit. But I know for sure we have over 60 projects total that we're working on. Some small, some big. And it's a lot of work, man. I just told the governor yesterday, I said, you know, when I'm finished working with this department, I can easily go work for FEMA because of how intimate I've gotten with the details and the planning of what they require and whatnot. I think I have a career in FEMA after I leave this department.
Yeah, man. I spoke with your other boss, ODR director.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And because when I say other boss, it's because of the projects aspect, right? She was talking about the administrative and bureaucratic and all that stuff that comes with actually getting federal dollars to get to where they need to go so projects can be seen with the naked eye. Yeah. Speak about that.
But you know what? I honestly, and I tell people this all the time, I'm not ashamed to say that, I credit a lot of our success when it comes to the FEMA projects because of ODR. I meet with Director Williams and her staff on a weekly basis. Every Thursday at 3 o'clock, I'm on a Teams call with her and her staff. And what they do is they're able to move me forward with my projects. If we stopped here and we say we need something, we have a week to when we come to those meetings the following week to then, you know, move a little step closer to the end game. So, you know, I'm very, very appreciative of the work that she's doing specifically with this department, because like I said, with all the projects that we have, I know for a fact her staff and herself has been integral in us getting where we are today. My goal, and I tell her this all the time, is to stop having those meetings weekly on Thursdays And only way that's going to happen is when I have all my projects basically completed. So that's what I'm looking forward to for. But they're great assistance to us. And we work closely and you know, I love the work that she's doing to help us, you know, get these projects out.
Brian presents $337,750 to the Caribbean Drag Racing Association to complete the St. Croix track. Now, the monies that they are getting is for the track only or some other the facilities around it?
Yeah, so you know we're trying to acquire the land next to it, which is held by the Renaissance. I think it's a Renaissance company that they're called. We're going to do like the return road and all of that stuff there. What's so significant about this project is sports tourism. Yeah. Car racing brings people from across the world. And I think it's going to be a boost to the St. Croix economy. Once we could get a track up, I could see people coming from Florida, from Puerto Rico, Dong Island,
Antigua,
the Caribbean, to get on this racing surface. So we're looking into some additional stuff as far as overnight storage for the vehicles. All of that is revenue and stuff like that that we want to put in. But you know, I'm glad that we was able to get these funds appropriated. Another lot of work. I got to thank my assistant for the work that she done in getting the notice of grant award. But the department, like I said, got some great news. We're starting to see a lot of the restrictions go down from health. So a lot of our projects, our programs are starting to come back out, which makes us very happy because that's what we do.
Well, you know, as someone who, for a good 15, 20 years, I was following drag racing on the mainland. And, you know, I hear a lot of people talking about drag racing, but they don't understand that there's one thing about drag racing that people tend to take for granted, and that's because organizers and promoters take care of that up front because it could be very, very detrimental. Insurance. You know, you're talking about, you know, these vehicles going from zero to 150, not zero to 60, zero to 150, real quick. So infrastructure is important, not just the strip.
Correct.
But barriers and all that stuff.
Safety
to make
barriers,
sure. To make sure that the fans are taken care of. Do we have enough spacing down there to deal with that?
Yeah, I think it do. I think the previous strip we had the metal guardrails or something like that, which is not sufficient for when you're dealing with that type of sport.
Correct.
According to Mr. Hector, who's the president of the Caribbean Drag Racing Association, they seem to have the space that they need. Again, with the additional land that we're trying to acquire, the return road and all of that, we're going to be able to finish this project.
You know what a drag strip used to be before?
I don't.
You know when you're there in the airport and you're looking out on the tarmac?
Yes.
On the backside?
Yeah.
Right there from you know, where the plane will take off?
Yeah, yeah.
That's where the race used to end. It used to start. It was an east to west drive. Right? You know, the plane will take off west to east.
Correct.
Right? Into the wind. So that's where our thing used to be back in the day before they moved up there.
And we talked about people coming to the islands for drag races. Just right next door. We are hoping that we could have some type of agreement with one of the barge companies where, you know, St. Thomas, St. John can come over for races. So it's exciting news, Mr. Hector.
Senator Stephen Hodge, he spoke of a facility in St. Thomas, right? What are they looking at?
You know, we had some conversations of that. I remember when I was small, we used to be out at the old Bovoni Strip.
Yeah.
We had some issues with that. A lot of the residents felt that it shouldn't have been there because of the noise. We contemplated switching it around where you would go from south to north to try to alleviate some of the noise. We even talked about a boom barrier to try to channel the noise. That was kind of tabled for a minute, but you know, I desperately hope in the future that we can also have a drag race strip for the island of St. Thomas, St. John.
Yeah. What we're going to do is we're going to finish up this segment. When we come back, we're going to focus on St. John that you just mentioned because a lot of work, a lot of attention has been given to St. John. The ballpark has been retrofitted for other uses right now, right? Mm-hmm. But the end goal is for that Cruise Bay facility to really be like a beacon in downtown Cruise Bay, right?
Another great news. Spoke with, and we'll talk about that when we get back. But spoke with.
No, we got time. Go ahead. Spoke with the superintendent
yesterday, and I'm probably going to be sitting down with them within the next couple of weeks so that we can finalize the MOU. That once that facility is completed, it will then be turned over to Sports Park and Recreation to manage. So,
okay, that's awesome, man.
You know, that's awesome. That's great for the island of St. John.
What about Coral Bay? How do we get the people who live in out on that eastern side?
Do you know, me and the governor had this conversation the other day, and he wanted to build, kind of put one of those sprung facilities that you see in the schools now down there, and build probably some tennis courts and basketball courts in Cruise Bay. So the conversation is there.
So you're saying that my question was consistent with the high level thing that you and the governor have been having?
He is considering Cruise Bay as far as putting some facilities there.
Coral Bay.
So that is something that is on the table right now.
Oh, that's nice, because, yo, I like it out there, man. Mm-hmm. You know, and your father bragged about Calabash Booty. That's his middle name. You know what I'm saying? Development and all that stuff from back there. But over there is nice, man. And it tends to get forgotten.
Correct.
And we don't want that in that particular area. And then there's a Summer's End, right? There's a development.
Correct.
They're looking at over there. Correct. Somewhat controversial, but, you know. Controversy is good, because you find out about yourself, you find out about your people when that happens. So you're saying that the governor wants some type of recreational presence in the Coral Bay area.
Coral Bay area, okay, absolutely.
Okay. That's good. And they got the park service there as well, right?
The park service is there.
Yeah, yeah. So we go keep an eye on that. Now, we're coming into Cruise Bay. Seeing one of the things, now we're going to go to the break in a little while. That's a concert. That's a natural concert venue, right? So that's incorporated in the vision as well, right?
You know what? So there's a lot of development going on. Like I said, we have the recreation center that we're going to just knock down and build back up, two stories, state of the art.
That. You were making an announcement about that four or five months ago, significant money.
Already gave the contract to our A&E firm for them to do the design. So that is in work. So I think what happened a lot of the time when I would mention St. Thomas, really and truly what I'm really saying is the St. Thomas, St. John district. So I got to do better when I start talking about it and stop excluding St. John and start saying St. Thomas, St. John district.
Exactly. You're going to start today. We're going to talk a little bit about more of that. And then we'll come over to St. Thomas, because I want to talk about the relationship with your agency and the Department of Education. We got Senator Sun, Commissioner Calvert White, Sports Park and Recreation joining us. We'll be back right after this.
The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.